One of our speakers got left off the list for some reason. But just like Eovaldi got put in last night to pitch for the Red Sox, sometimes we have a rover or a starter who comes into the relief lineup, and that's going to be Chaz Parsons tonight. And I chose him for a couple of reasons. One is he's the oldest resident to ever graduate from our program. Did a great job. Number two, he was part of one of the things that I always wanted to do. One day we were doing a trauma case, which I didn't do very frequently as a prima donna specialist, but it was a patient who was shot, and I always wanted to take the bullet and throw it into the metal pan. I never got to do that. We removed the bullet, and Chaz let me throw it into the metal pan. You might not remember that, Chaz, but thank you. He's going to talk to us about ACS service and removal of foreign bodies.
Great. Thank you for having me. I have no disclosures, and I'm going to be very brief. I thought I was going last, and I thought that would be fitting because I'm usually the last one to get called with foreign bodies. So, I'm actually happy about that as a trauma and ACS surgeon. So, I'm just going to have a very, very brief look. Subcutaneous foreign bodies, intra-abdominal foreign bodies, and some summary points, as well as some cases. So, subcutaneous foreign bodies, it's such a huge range. There's no data on it. It's what we all see every day in the ED. Things you want to know, is this something that's been there for a long time? Did you just step on that glass bottle? Is there a wound still present? Is it palpable? Can I actually just pull it out? Has there been time for a local tissue reaction? Is there a joint or tendon involved, such as in fight, bite, and that sort of things? Types of the foreign body, is it glass? Do you think it's, other types of material, splinters, wood, dirt? Is there a piece of metal in there that you got? The question is always that we get is what imaging is going to be sort of the best. And in terms of your first step, usually a plain x-ray is a good first step. It will miss quite a few objects, but it's relatively cheap, accessible. It'll also tell you if there's a fracture or any joint involvement underneath. There's a lot of data on trying to use ultrasound. It's actually quite useful. However, the sensitivity is only in a lot of the series 50%. Some as high as 90%. I think that's going up, but it can be quite specific. At least it's an extension of your physical exam and allow you to then pull whatever it is out. And then finally, usually rule out, leave CT as a last resort for an isolated foreign body. However, in trauma, we often start with the CT for different reasons. So this is a kind of classic patient where I worry about foreign bodies. This is a ATV rollover, and he ended up getting his hand caught underneath the ATV. There's bits of rubber, grass, gravel in there, and the goal really is just to treat the underlying major injuries to the muscle and fascia. However, you do want to do a good debridement. Try and pick out any material you see, because later there could be a nidus for infection. Do you have to get every little bit out? No. They'll often get capsulated, and but you do the best you can with what you got. This is another one. This was a moose versus car. I trained in Vermont. There was a lot of moose hair in the wound that we had to get because the moose comes up onto the windshield, usually late at night. You're driving on a highway in Vermont, and the moose, you basically kneecap the moose with your car, and he ends up on top of your hood. So this one, you just have to make sure you spend some time washing it out copiously, get it cleaned out. And eventually you'll need to do something for tissue coverage. This is an MVC versus bicycle, and the handle of the bike was in his leg. This is just after we removed it. Unfortunately, I didn't realize in the operating room that the brake mechanism was actually holding it in the leg. I was really worried that it was in some major structure. It was actually just like you took the brake handle and put some skin in between it, so it just popped right out. Fortunately, there was a small saphenous vein injury, but nothing else underneath. We wash it out, make sure they have tetanus, and go on from there. This is an interesting one. Again, soft tissue injury primarily, but this was a gentleman who got into a fight with somebody with a golf club that had been sawed off and ended up having it basically put through the soft tissue of the upper neck. Fortunately, the spine is a nice bony structure that will protect the spinal cord, and you'll often just bounce off of it and go through soft tissue alone. You know, sometimes there are some obviously concomitant nerve or vascular injuries with these. Fortunately, this gentleman didn't have any of those. So it was as simple as pulling it out. I would just recommend before you pull it out, anytime you're pulling out a large foreign body and you don't know where it's sitting, probably good to be in the OR and at least have some attempt or at least ready to get control if there is a major vascular injury under there. So, you know, subcutaneous foreign bodies, wash it out, irrigate it. You can often get away with just local wound exploration. These are the ones that I don't get called on because they're often done just in the emergency department, the splinters and, you know, such as that. You know, and then if there's gross contamination, large devitalized bits of soft tissue, and obviously joint or tendon involvement, then you're going to have to probably go to the operating room and do a formal debridement. Generally, the things that I just want to make clear are that antibiotics are generally not indicated. If you have a good washout and you have the body removed very quickly, think about tetanus prophylaxis. And then, you know, there is some data out there that there's a relatively high litigation risk if you forget bits of things. And there's, you know, do the best you can to get everything in a reasonable amount of time. But as long as you've done, you know, your due diligence and just not dismiss that there's some foreign body there, you should be okay. I'm going to switch just to intra-abdominal foreign bodies. I figured I would go last, and everyone's talked about endoscopy and all these other issues. One thing that has been brought up is this is a challenging patient population. The patients I see often have comorbid psychiatric illness, and this results in ingestion or some self-harm behavior. They may have had multiple prior procedures. They're generally your frequent flyers that you'll get to know on a surgical service. And this is my main point is surgery should be used as a last resort. So I try and find every excuse I can not to go for the sixth time back into somebody's abdomen. So my colleagues can help with endoscopy, interventional radiology, whoever I can call to help me out and get me out of the jam, I will call. And the other take home is that many items, even sharp objects, may pass without any significant sequelae, especially if they're a little smaller. So when do you have to operate? Hard indications, obviously a perforated viscus, peritoneal signs or a complete obstruction, obvious shock. And then, you know, a little softer indication is failure of passage. What's failure? That's a moving target. And obviously there's some data that says bigger or larger objects greater than 2.5 centimeters will have a very difficult time getting past the pylorus and into the and then the ileocecal valve, and that might require a higher index of suspicion. So this is my classic case. He's a young man well known to me. He's schizophrenic, and every time he hears voices that tell him to eat things, and you can see on his plain film when he showed up in our emergency room that he's eaten, you know, he's ingested quite a few foreign bodies here. He's had 6 operations prior for this same problem. He's also had numerous endoscopies to remove these foreign bodies. Usually upper endoscopy if we get early, and then occasionally he perforated his duodenum. He's had a prior duodenal surgery as well. So what do? We wait. So hospital day 3, you can see already a lot of the objects have already moved. That pin up in the could be transverse colon, could be stomach. On CT, it was actually in the transverse colon, was already moving through. That other object is starting to pass. Another 2 days later, as long as he doesn't have peritonitis and he's stable, just keep watching him, serial exams. He started to move everything through. However, you can see that this stuff in the right lower quadrant really isn't going anywhere. Finally, day 7 comes around. I've, you know, called my friends saying, look, he's not getting any better. He's not worse, but this stuff is just not moving. So my colleagues in gastroenterology did a colonoscopy and actually got to 40 centimeters from the ileocecal valve, and they noted this foreign object, and it looked like it was poking through the wall of the ileum. And that's when I said, oh, man. So then I was kind of forced to operate. And this is what we got out. He had a dollar bill. There's a hairpin. I see a golf pencil. There was a coaxial cable connector and a whole bunch of other stuff. So last resort, primary excision and repair. This is another recent case we had. Another gentleman who, when he gets depressed, he likes to swallow knives. This knife was actually attempted multiple times, about for 4 hours we spent trying to get it endoscopically in the operating room using an overtube. Ultimately, we decided he was getting sicker in the operating room, developing signs of shock. We ultimately had to do his third upper midline and go to his stomach and extract it surgically. So I heard foreign bodies with Dr. Cataldo. I am a trauma surgeon. This is a patient of mine who got shot in the left lower quadrant, had a colonic injury, and there's, I don't know if you can see the bullet there in the lower pelvis. He actually had been operated on by another hospital prior to getting to me, and that surgeon had decided to put there was a clear vascular injury in the left groin from the gunshot, so he put a covered stent into the groin to help with the extrav prior to sending to me. There's his post-op chest x-ray after he arrested on the table by the time he got to me. After we got him back, if you look, there's the bullet there, a little zoomed in, but I don't know if it projects well, but you can see there's the covered stent. It's on his chest x-ray. So please don't put covered stents in trauma patients who present with a gunshot wound if you have the opportunity. So he basically, by the time we got to him, resuscitated him, he probably embolized his stent during my portion of the procedure, and there it is in the lung. So another point about foreign bodies, if they are near vascular structures, whether iatrogenic or otherwise, they can embolize. So that's an indication for, pretty aggressive removal, and I'm sure people will talk about that. Do I need to remove the bullet? Dr. Cataldo mentioned that I let him drop the bullet. We took it out. Usually I recommend don't take the bullet out unless you absolutely have to. There are some reports of lead poisoning. If the bullet particular is in the CSF or in a joint space and they show up anywhere from weeks to years later with lead poisoning, then you should take it out. If there's nerve entrapment, obviously if there's a risk of ischemia from it or embolization, then you should take it out. But otherwise, leave it alone unless you absolutely have to. So I said I'd be quick. So for subcutaneous foreign bodies, index of suspicion, look at the mechanism, think about imaging, wash it out or explore, beware of organic material that may have a little bit higher risk of abscess if it's left behind, and then ask yourself, do I really need to take this out? Is this going to cause any problems? The classic is the spray of birdshot after a shotgun wound. You do not need to take every one of those out. If they're in the left ventricle, you should probably take it out, but otherwise leave it alone. And then intra-abdominal, again, surgery is the last resort in my mind, and you want to maximize the help of your colleagues. And then, surgically, I would just consider anyone who's done that fifth laparotomy will say, maybe we should do a different incision this time because it can be a real bear and it's a dangerous situation. And finally, bullets do not always need to be removed. Thank you.